we made a number of steps towards constructing the gauge string duality. And today we'll try to finish this process, although this title is overambitious. So let me put some quotes here. Obviously, so the duality remains a conjecture, and saying that we construct something is indeed overambitious, but we'll try to argue that the statement of duality is a reasonable conjecture. So last time we discussed the theory that described the low energy excitations of open strings attached to these D-free brains, and the statement was that the theory that we'll be interested in is n equals 4 supersymmetric Young Mills in 4 dimensions, with a particular Lagrangian and the field contents that we discussed. I think we discussed last time. Maybe we haven't discussed, but okay, let me in 4 dimensions with a gauge group SU and C, and ingredients of n equals 4 were the gauge field, which corresponds to 2 degrees of freedom. Whenever I say number of degrees of freedom, of course you have to multiply also by nc squared minus 1, or in the large n limit is nc squared, because these are matrices, and we have we have scalars. So all of them are joined. So I is equal going from 1 to 6. So these are 6 degrees of freedom. And then there are fermions with 2 indices. So 1 fermionic index, and then index A of x. So these are fields. So there are 4. So A A belongs to SU4. And alpha is 1 and 2, so it's 4 times 2 equal to 8 degrees of freedom. So as it must be, because they have to match, this is a supersymmetric theory. So all fields are in the adjoint representation of the gauge group. And that means that so from the perspective of thinking of, so we will be interested in finite temperature applications and computing things like viscosity and other transport coefficients. So you can imagine at weak coupling, so this theory is a gauge theory, obviously, right? There is a gauge field, but in addition to gauge field, there is some other junk floating around, like there are some scalars and there are fermions, but they are in the adjoint representation, not in fundamental, right, our fermions. So this is not a very good model to think about, let's say, QCD, where you have quarks in the fundamental representation. So this means that in order to construct something more realistic, if we want to answer questions which are related to behavior of quark ground plasma, we need to find a way of including the fundamental fermions into the theory and building the holographic dual, the gauge, the gravity dual, to theory of fundamental fermions. This problem was solved, at least to some degree, by Karch and Katz in 2002, but we will talk about this later. So that refers to embedding the so-called probe brains. So for example, D7 brains into our brain constructions, and then you have fundamental fermions in this construction. All right, but so far, so all fields are adjoint. The theory is superconformal. Theory is superconformal. There is a group which is known as PSU 2 4. So in the tutorial, the symmetry that is part of this group is the conformal symmetry. SO2,4. And there is also, so the generators of conformal symmetry will be the momenta, then the standard Lorentz group type generators, and then there is D, the and the special conformal transformation. So these are scaling transformations, and these are special conformal transformations. So in the tutorial on Thursday, you'll be asked to do something with these generators and see how this can be understood as the symmetry group of a particular space-time. So I will kind of delegate this to the tutorial. So there is also R symmetry, because this is a SU4. So this is n equals 4 gauge theory. So we have a number of generators of supersymmetry is equal to 4. And there is an associated R symmetry. I refer to your course in supersymmetry if you had one, which is SO6. So R symmetry, and as an algebra, this is the same as SU4. So this is a group which transforms our fermions. And there are generators of this group TA, but so A is from 1 to 15, so there is some algebra. And altogether, they form this superconformal algebra PSU. Now, there is the Susie, well, we will not really, so there is Poincaré. Poincaré supersymmetry generators denoted by, I think this is the only time when they actually appear. So this is alpha dot. So A from 1 to 4. So this simply tells you that there are four generators, right? So this type because n equals 4. And then there is also conformal SUSY. So it's a huge group. So the theory has a lot of symmetries. Well, S bar A alpha dot. And because of this enormous symmetries, number of symmetries, it is very much constrained. So this is a gauge theory, and it wants to do yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so A goes from 1 to 4, and alpha is 1, 2. Yes. So A is, so because we have sort of four species, if you want, of these fermions, so this A is going to 1 to 4, and altogether there are.
So why is the A mu not also 4? I mean, A mu has a Lyapunov
parameter. No, but this is a different. So the gluon is neutral with respect to. So there are two things. So there is one, there is a gauge group, right? And all these guys are matrices, right? So that's a separate kind of story, right? All of them are in the adjoint of S, U, and C. In addition to that, because it is supersymmetric, right? It has this. So there is a multiplet of these fields, and there is an index which counts the number of these right. So the bosonic degrees of freedom of these multiplets are gluons and scalars, and they are balanced by the eight fermions, eight because there is an index here, but the gluon is neutral with respect to this SU4. It's the name of this group. If I recall what P here, so this is probably PSU. So this is special unitary, but P that I remember. there is some group. It's not, so what this PSU is an embedding. So you have all these symmetries. Like there is a conformal symmetry, right? And then the conformal symmetry is an extension, if you want, of the Lorentz group. So it, so all the generators of Lorentz are sitting inside, right? So these guys are sitting inside. So there is some, if you can think about this as a big matrix where these things are embedded, right? So there are additional transformation because it is conformal group, but then because it is supersymmetric, so you form what is called a supergroup. And that means that you can think of it as a kind of extension of your space-time by this Grassmann variables, right, theta. And so your matrix will have a special form where you have a bosonic sector, and then there is a fermionic sector. And then this whole thing combined has this name of PSU, and I think this is probably the only time you will see this. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't remember what exactly P is. P. Yeah, I don't remember. But it's easy to find out if you ever need this. Right. So anyway, so there's some algebra. So this algebra, this symmetry forces various properties of this gauge theory to be very much constrained, and the strongest constraint is the statement that the beta function is equal to zero non-perturbatively, and that means that G Young Mills is equal to constant. Now, it has other properties as well, so at least one of them I want to mention. This theory was conjectured a long time ago, so this, I must say that, you know, this, of course, didn't appear suddenly in the late 90s because of ADS-CFT, but it was studied very well in the 80s together with all supersymmetric gauge theories and people. I mean, this conjecture and the proofs of this conjecture were around in the late 80s. Now the theory. It has an exact Montonin-Olive duality, and this is something that we mentioned in the beginning of the lectures. It is self-dual. Under the transformation that in particular inverts the coupling in the following way, but in general these transformations belong to the group SL to Z. And so this is a conjecture again, and the evidence for this conjecture are that one can show, so there is some evidence, one can show that the spectra of elementary excitations under the transformation is exchanged with spectra of monopoles. And I refer you to Harvey's lectures, which I already mentioned a number of times, for full details of what this all means, if you are interested. For us, this is just an indication that, so the main property that you have to keep in mind is this one. And this is very bad if you want to say something about, for example, the real gauge theories, namely the ones like QCD, because obviously this doesn't have this property that the coupling runs with energy, and therefore, in that sense, this is a very bad model for QCD. However, at finite temperature, things are better because the supersymmetry is broken at finite temperature. And then many things, so at finite temperature, this theory will be a collection of these gauge fields and scalars and fermions is some hot soup of these degrees of freedom. And many things will be shared with what is happening in QCD, even though the exact set of degrees of freedom will be different. So that will be less, it will be less lethal than at zero temperature. So we will see, so what we were doing last time was the, so I said that the philosophy of this was the following, that you, we are trying to write down the, to write down equations which are similar to some, in some sense, that equations, to the equations of the closed string theory, which resulted in this low energy equations of motion, like Army nu equal to the right hand side and other equations. Now here we are dealing with open strings the Lagrangian. So in the low energy approximation, you will get this Lagrangian like n equals 4, but then the Lagrangian or the action meaning the low energy, will receive higher derivatives corrections. Just like the closed string low energy action in general would receive the alpha prime corrections, but these corrections will be suppressed by alpha prime omega squared, and we will see later, at least I will give you some references of where this is coming from. So this is dimension, so suppressed by some dimensionless parameter. So alpha prime has a dimension of LS, so it's LS squared, right? So this is dimensionless. This is the energy of your quanta. So there will be some tail, infinite tail of corrections, but these corrections have this have this suppression. Now, what else do we have? So there are also closed strings, in the bulk. So what we are trying to do is some analysis or some attempt of analysis of what is happening when you have, let's say, one brain, right, which is defined by these fluctuations of the endpoints of these open strings. But of course, this brain is embedded in 10-dimensional space-time where you have also closed strings. And in general, there is interaction. So these open strings can join the endpoints, for example, and then they can convert into the open string, into the closed strings, and vice versa. The closed string can touch your brain and become open string. So this amplitude is not zero. It can be computed. So in general, all of this is interacting. So we are trying to see what happens in the low energy limit. So there are also closed strings in the bulk floating around. And they are, so in the bulk, so they interacting with the gravitational constant G10. So I remind you that that was proportional to dG squared S LS to the 8. And so this means that interaction terms in closed string sector will have this characteristic dependence on energy omega to the 8 LS to the 8. And this is small, of course. So this is small when we are considering the low energy limit in the limit of omega much less than 1 over LS, which we are going to take. Now, then there are also open closed string interaction interactions, and these are controlled by the same parameter. So omega to the 8 G10. So this is a conversion of the open strings to closed strings and vice versa. And this will be governed by G10. So again, so we have here something which looks like LS to the 8 omega to the 8. And this will be small appropriately in the limit of low energy. Okay, so what happens at low energy when you have omega L S much less than 1? So we have closed strings do not interact in this limit. And decouple from the open string sector. This open string sector in this limit, which in this limit is described by n equals 4 superand nulls in 4 dimensions, right? So what we are doing is the sort of philosophical description of what is happening at low energy. Again, so every time I say low energy, it means that energy is much less than typical string scale, which is in this governed by LS. And in the low energy limits, we have suppression of interaction between closed strings, suppression of interaction between open strings and closed strings. And on top of that, there is this action, which Lagrangian, which I will write down in a moment, the action which describes the fluctuations of open strings. And this action will give you n equals 4 superand nulls plus some corrections. And these corrections will be, again, suppressed by not so much like here, but sufficiently so that they can be in this limit, they can be decoupled from what is happening. And what remains is just the quanta, the excitations which we discussed here. Now, this statement of the action, right? So I'm a bit reluctant, not reluctant, but I'm kind of postponing this until the last moment, if you want. And there is a reason for that. So the action, so let me put this as a remark. If we have a single Debrain, so for a single DP brain, the constant or slow varying world volume fields higher order alpha prime corrections can be resummed and the result of this resummation is the famous Dirac-Born-Infeld action DBI, which has a history on its own. So there is a tension in front, and then there is the integral d p plus 1 x e to the minus phi. And then there is a square root and here we have the determinant. So it would be determinant of the metric, but not quite induced metric. Plus 2 pi alpha prime f mu. right? For a single, with a single brain, we have, instead of this non-abelian stuff there, we just have one abelian field, U1, and field strength of this field is here, F mu nu. We have a metric, and we have one scalar field. So these are, and there are fermions which are floating around also, but this is bosonic part. So where the, yeah, just a second, where dpp, if the tension is 2 pi pgs ls p plus 1, the energy of excitations. So I mean, remember, we always had so this statement that the energy, for example, is much less is 1 over ls. So this omega is, if you want, this is, right, so it's just the.
Right. And the other thing, when you say the corrections can be resummed, what do you mean by resummation?
What I mean by resummation is the following. So remember, for closed strings, right, so what we did, we wrote down these beta functionals, and the beta functionals would start like R mu nu and so on. Then there are alpha prime corrections, and in principle, there is an infinite tail of these alpha prime corrections. Now, for open strings, you do similar exercise. It is not a trivial exercise, so it's something that was done in the mid 1980s, and I can give you references. So. Typically, well, people cite two papers, one by Fratkin and Seitlin, and now one by Rob Lee. But the point is that you write down these equations of motion first, and then you ask yourself, what is the action which gives these equations of motion? And it turns out that in the case of open string theory, you can actually resum this tail of alpha primes, right? Because when you expand, you can expand this. So this is determinant, right? And it's square root, right? So you can expand. In fact, this is an exercise for the tutorial because at least one, the first term will need to establish. So when you do this expansion, you will get a term which will look like f mu nu squared, right? Plus corrections to that, infinite tail of corrections in higher and higher powers of alpha prime. Okay. So in some sense, so this is related to the behavior of quantum field theory in external fields. And you can think of this f mu nu as, so there is some long story behind this. When you have a quantum field theory in an external electromagnetic field, so typically you can resum, you can do the resummation and your corrections to your, you can still consider a quantum, like a Feynman diagram expansion, right, in your processes. But the external field in each diagram, in each order of the diagram, can be taken into account exactly. So that's known in quantum field theory in external fields. And a similar argument applies here. So I will not go into any detail of that. But the point is, so do the exercise, right? So when you, OK, let me just write this down. So when you expand. So expanding dBi to quadratic order in f mu nu, namely you have f mu nu squared, one recovers the usual abelian Lagrangian with the identification. So you will have some coefficient in front of f mu nu squared, and this coefficient you identify with g squared Young-Mills in the appropriate normalization of your generators, as we discussed yesterday. But in the standard normalization with c equal to 1/2, you just identify. So you will have this term f mu nu squared, and there is some stuff in front of it. So this stuff is natural, you naturally identify with one of the 4G squared young males, whatever it is. And that gives you this relationship, right? So, but in principle, it's an infinite set of alpha prime corrections. So when I mean resumming, I mean that all of them can be, when you write down the equations of motion, you don't write this. You write this infinite tail. But then you notice, and that refers to this quantum field theory in external fields, that is no different, and therefore they can be put together under the square root.
So the resummation is possible because the beta function is zero.
No. This has nothing to do. Again, this is single, right? So for a single DP brain, right? We are not talking about. In a moment, I will tell you why. We are not talking about n equals 4 anymore. This is U1. All right, so this is just electromagnetic field, one brain only, okay, and then you can do this resumption. So it's not because beta function is equal to zero, no.
Right, but then so if I have an infinite tail of terms with different powers of alpha, how do I know that converges? Because if it doesn't converge, it can resum it in many different ways to give.
When you do the resummation and you know the result. Right, so that's a proof that the thing converges. Right, it's like if you look at the infinite series of the function 1 divided by the 1 minus z. Right, you know it converges because you have a result and you can analytically continue it and so on. Right, but so looking at the series, you don't know it. For example, in closed string theory, there is no such a resummation. Right, so it would be nice to have a formula that would tell you what is this whole tail of alpha prime corrections in closed string theory, but it's not known. So, okay, so this is the abelian case. Unfortunately, so non-abelian version, well, let's say full non-abelian version, perhaps, of the DBI action is not fully known, and I don't remember if I put any references in your list, but you can consult. So this is a relatively old paper, but I mean you can investigate what is the status now by looking at who cited it and so on. So if you're interested in this, we can talk more how to investigate this. But the problem is that if you want to write down something in the case of the non-abelian, and we have a collection of these DP brains, then unfortunately one doesn't know fully how to write this down in non-abelian case. Although there are some constructions which are plausible, but when I say fully, it means that full structure is not known. However, one can consider corrections. So one can consider corrections to DBI, because this is not absolutely exact. It is written under the assumptions of the slow varying or constant world volume fields, and that is essential because there are corrections to that if the fields are not slow varying, and so beyond the slow varying. Low variant field approximation. Field approximation. And okay, so again, for people who are interested, the names of string theorists who were doing this, and some maybe are doing this, are Tate and Green and Bachas, and again, so we can talk more about this if you're interested in this subject. So so there is a lot of still a lot of things unknown, but again, for our purposes, the important thing is that these corrections will be suppressed by LS squared omega squared, and other interactions will be suppressed even stronger. Okay, so this is what we need to do. So now let's construct this basic example of ADS CFT. Right, so yeah, so we will so going back for a moment to this algebraic things and this PSU and whatever it is and right, all these matters with algebra of the behind this n equals 4. So here in this course we are focusing on a particular kind of line of development, but of course there's enormous field in ADS CFT related to integrability of n equals 4. And there, of course, this is all of primary importance. What I suggest you would do, so a similar course, well, not similar course, but kind of in the last year, so Pedro Vieira was given this course of exploration of something, right? And he is one of the people who is kind of working on this integrability stuff. And because these lectures are online, so you can just enjoy discussion. I'm sure I haven't seen all of the lectures, but I'm sure that this will feature more prominently than here. For us, this is just a remark, but there it actually plays an important role. So that's the source of your wisdom if you want to. On Thursday, so there'll be some problem in tutorials to kind of familiarize yourself with the algebra. But again, so we're not going to dwell on this for too long. Now, the construction, so basic example. Which is ADS CFT itself. Now, ingredients. Ingredients, we have the collection of D-free brains. And C of them. And so consider them at low energy. Right? Then there is a chance to actually know the degrees of freedom in one limit. It's like, of course, at intermediate energies, everything is excited, right? So it's a horrible mess. It's very difficult to decouple, right? So all these guys are coupled, right? The closed strings interact very strongly. They interact with the brain, right? So they evaporate, the brain evaporates, and you know. So it's an extremely complicated process. So to make sense, it's similar to what you do when you want to understand some elementary properties of the ground state, right? You cool down the system, right? So you reduce the temperature to close to absolute zero, and then you discover, oh, I have this quantum nature of my system, like liquid helium, right, is described by particular excitations. I can more or less count them, right, one by one, and so on. But otherwise, everything else is excited. So consider these ingredients at low energy, and there will be two pictures, if you want. Two pictures, and a picture where we have open string theory picture, and closed string theory picture. So we consider these ingredients at low energy from two different perspectives, right? Open string theory perspective and closed string theory. Now, if in the open string theory, string theory perspective. So what do we have? We have this collection of these brains, and we will take them to be coincident. Right? So this sometimes is referred to as a stack of NC D-free brains. And yeah, there could be closed strings in the bulk. So generically, the total action will, which describes the situation, will contain ingredients, the terms, the action of the brain itself. Then there is the action of the bulk, and then there is part which describes the interaction between the bulk and the brains. And this is the analog of something that you know very well. If I write down the action of this type, right, so minus E A mu dx mu, and then I have minus 4 E squared, the integral of F mu squared dx, plus various corrections come from quantum loops and so on. So this is the analog, right? So we have a certain object, and we have the interaction between. So suppose it's an electron, for example, and if it were not charged, we would just have the action like this for this object. If it is charged, then yeah, it interacts with the external electromagnetic field, and there is some action which describes the bulk, so to speak, right? The bulk. So there is an electromagnetic field in the bulk, and that interacts with our charged object, right? So this is the analog of this. So then, what do we know about these ingredients as brain, as bulk, and as interactions? Well, we know that the S on the brain, right? The S brain is n equals 4 super n mils. With gauge group S, U, and C, and all these ingredients that we briefly mentioned in 3 plus 1 dimensions, plus corrections, and these corrections, yeah, and here we have also this relationship between G squared Young Mills and the string coupling GS, plus corrections of the order of omega squared LS squared, which is much less than 1 in the low energy limit. Right, so corrections. This. Now, S in the bulk, well, so this is classical D equals 10 Minkowski space-time, Minkowski gravity. Some gravitons floating around, plus corrections of order of g squared s. So this is our Newton's constant 10 dimensions. They interact with each other, but this is also suppressed at low energy. Should be, its gravity is weak. And then finally, there is also interaction term. This interaction is of order omega 8. G10, which is the same as this thing, and this is also small. Okay. Now, then, so this is open string picture, fine, which describes. So I remind you that we embed. So when you draw this picture, you already make a certain assumptions, right? You make an assumptions that you're you embed something which has non-zero mass per unit volume in the 10-dimensional space-time, and then you ask yourself to what degree this object distorts the space-time. So when you draw it like this, you already sort of assume that this distortion is not dramatic, right? So it's kind of, you can still think of these fluctuating embedded surfaces, right? They don't destroy your picture of 10-dimensional space-time in the region where they are localized. I mean, so this is a kind of mental note to keep in mind. So now let's look at the same object, namely, so our ingredient, right? So our ingredient, this one, again at low energy, but now from the closed string perspective. So from a closed string perspective, and from a closed string perspective, we know that we have a solution which we discussed, and so in the closed string picture, we have the p equals 3 solution to type 2b low energy equations of motion. And again, so this is the same omega ls much less than 1. Okay, so we are in the same energy sort of domain. And this solution is something that you had, you know, by heart now. This is h minus 1/2. And then let's consider a zero temperature situation. We have dx squared plus dy squared dz squared plus h 1/2 dr squared plus r squared d omega squared 5, the 5 sphere, where h is 1 plus l to the fourth over r to the fourth. And this l is related to, so there is also phi form, right? So I don't want to write this explicitly. There is an expression that you already had in your notes. So there is an expression for phi form. The dilaton is constant. Dilaton is constant, and this is an ansatz which solves our equations of motion. Now, what is important is that so you can have this, in this case, phi form integrated over phi sphere. Exercise for you, and that gives you the total charge of our solution. And from this equation, what you can do is you can relate this L, because this L parameter, right, it's just like the L parameter here, it's similar to what appears in the Schwarzschild solution when you solve the solution, right? And you have this M, just a second. So you have this M, the mass of the Schwarzschild solution. But a priori, when you write down the solution satisfies the equations of motion outside of the body of mass M, right? So if you have a spherical symmetric distribution of mass M, right, then the Schwarzschild solution is valid outside of this distribution of mass, not inside it. But you know that it is sourced by this M, and you can compute the ADM mass of the thing and convince yourself that this M parameter which enters the Schwarzschild solution is indeed related to this ADM integral. And similarly here, you can compute this integral, you can compute this ADM mass and the charge, right? And this is the extremal solution with M equal to Q, and this mass is related to this L. In particular, the relationship with NC, so there are NC of these brains, and the relationship is given by this formula. We had a sorry.
Kind of going back a little bit, but I remember, I think I remember in our GR course a while back, we were looking at the sort of topological defects. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember. So in the low energy effective action, are those terms also present?
Yes. So in fact, we will encounter the Gibbons-Hawking term. We cannot live without it. Because when you have a manifold with a boundary, okay, then you must include this term. Otherwise, your variational procedure is not very well defined. Right? But it's only if you have a manifold with a boundary. So when we consider, some time later, we will finally have this recipe of how to compute stuff from anti-de Sitter space. The ADS, so this solution, right? So this solution is asymptotically flat, right? Then, in a moment, what we'll do, we'll take the near horizon limit of this solution, and separate everything else. So it will be this. in the limit of some of these parameters being large, you will see that there is a sharp separation between the 10-dimensional space-time, which will be flat and not very sort of eventful and so on, and this near horizon limit where all the dynamics will be happening. There'll be a huge potential barrier between them. And then, so you, we will take this near horizon limit, and this will be our bulk, our space-time that will be dual to n equals 4, okay? And this space-time will have a boundary, naturally. It's a boundary of ADS. And because we have a manifold with a boundary, then writing down the full action, gravitational action, we will have to include the Gibbons-Hawking term. Okay, so these guys are solutions in a full 10-dimensional space without a boundary. Right, so it's a Minkowski. They are embedded in the flat Minkowski space. So these guys, right? So we don't need a Gibbons-Hawking term to write down the action. Okay. Somebody else wanted to ask. Thank you.
I had sort of two questions. So first, going back again, how do we know that the bulk of the open string theory is classical Minkowski spacetime as opposed to some other vacuum solution?
Well, the Minkowski space is a solution of the full equations of motion to all orders of alpha prime. Okay, we started by, I mean, it's not the only solution. You can say that I want my strings, for example, to propagate on a different space, for example, on ADS from the start, right? But that is possible. So you can say that this is a candidate vacuum. What you have to do to compare, so when you have different candidates, different backgrounds, so the way to compare which one is the ground state is the comparison of free energies of various backgrounds, right? So you compute the free energy and you minimize it and you discover that, yeah, so it's about.
Just one thing, in the metric that you wrote, are you missing a factor of F and one over F?
No, that's because I wrote extremal. So here I wrote, so this is extremal. Extremal meaning that our function f, which we will need later on, it's 1 over r naught to the fourth, remember, over r to the fourth. The extremal, this is equal to 1 because r naught is equal to 0. And that corresponds to this limit when m is equal to q. Okay, so because this is what we're doing now is the, this is a basic example. This is ADSFC at zero temperature. Okay, so zero temperature situation. Later on, we will include this factor, Blackenian factor F, and we will have ADSFT at finite temperature. But we start with the simplest example. Yep. Yeah.
So the D3 brain, is just something that we, in the open string picture, it's just a massive object that we assume does not back react on the Minkowski.
It does. So in a moment, I will discuss this in detail. So when it back reacts and when it not, it's. So you mean in the open string picture? Well, it is a solution of the open string equation of motion, right? Because we have this action which we resummed, the DBI action. Yeah, so in that sense, it is a solution to that type of equation, yes. But it's only true in a certain limit, which as we'll see shortly. Okay. All right, so okay, let me. right, so in fact, so remember that this solution is asymptotically flat. Asymptotically flat. And now let's consider in the remaining 5 minutes precisely the discussion to Anna's question, which we will call the gravitational dressing of D3 brains. Of D3 brains. So consider again the open string picture. So again, open string picture. And so in the open string picture, we have this collection of NC hypersurfaces embedded in 10 dimension. But recall that corrections, so we have corrections to a flat metric. For example, in the usual d equals 4 Schwarzschild solution, they go as gm over r, right? So remember, in the Schwarzschild metric, we had this piece, like, for example, 1 minus 2 gm over c squared r dt squared. And you can happily calculate how small this piece is, for example, in this room, right? So given the mass of the Earth and so on. So in comparison to 1. So this is dimensionless correction to 1. So as long as this remains small in comparison to 1, we can say that this is a small perturbation, a small correction to a flat metric. And for all practical purposes, we can use the flat metric and the hypersurfaces kind of embedded into it without distorting the space-time. So this is relevant. So this becomes relevant then gm over r is of order 1. Now, for an extended object, in let's say p plus 1 dimensional object in d dimensions, a similar argument would tell you that the correction will go as there is a gravitational constant, and then there's a total mass, and then divided by r d minus p minus 3. So convince yourself that this is the case. By dimensional analysis, this is obvious, but you can also think of the Poisson equation, for example. And because the potential, the Newtonian potential, will go as gm over r to power d minus 2 in d spatial dimensions. So this means that for NC, so even without kind of looking only at this picture, right? So we don't even want to look into, we know the metric, right? So we kind of we may think that, okay, so why don't we just look here, and then this is already the answer. But I deliberately don't want to look there. So we have this kind of very primitive reasoning with the stack of these massive objects. Like for NC, D3 brains, the appropriate correction, right, is similar to a Schwarzschild one here. We expect this on dimensional grounds to go as G10 and then NC. And then the tension of each of these objects, right, there are NC of them, has tension for each of them T3 divided by R to the fourth, which is, of course, expected. And it is compatible with what is written on the left-hand side. And now we recall also that G10 is G squared S LS to the eight, and T3 is 1 over gs ls to the fourth, right? And then this means, so this together means that this gravitational dressing, so the correction becomes, so gravitational correction is of order gs nc ls to the fourth divided by r to the fourth, okay? And the conclusion, so you can say immediately that we can make the following conclusion, that this correction is of order 1, so it becomes relevant in two different cases. So if I have this parameter, so GS and C is much less than one, right, then correction is of order one for R much less than LS. But for in the opposite limit of GS and C much greater than one, correction is important for R much greater than LS. Right? So this tells us that this naive sort of gravitational Dressen argument tells us that in this limit, we cannot use the open string picture because the space-time will become distorted, will become corrected for distances for R, which is much greater than the string length LS. And that means that here we will not have, so this picture of hypersurfaces which are infinitely thin and do not influence the bulk space-time is no longer valid because we will get the distortion by this correction in the case when this parameter GS and C is much greater than one. Now, in the closed string picture, 1 minute. In the closed string picture, so in the closed string picture, the relevant parameter is this L to the fourth divided by R to the fourth, right? So suppose we don't know, so we know, of course, philosophically that this and that is the same thing, but suppose we don't know that, we just look at the solution and we see that the distortion from Minkowski metric, right, from this one is governed by this ratio of L to the fourth to R to the fourth. And we can say that for L over R much greater than one, and that corresponds to R much less than L, the metric becomes so ds squared then, so this is a near horizon limit, squared over all squared is dt squared plus dx squared plus dy squared plus dz squared plus L squared over R squared dr squared, plus what is interesting thing is that there is a decoupling of the phi sphere, right? So this is completely decoupled, doesn't depend on R. And this is a metric of ADS5 cross S5 in the appropriate coordinates. So therefore, what we have is the two pictures which are valid in the opposite limits of a certain parameter. And this parameter, as we know, of course, because GS is related to G squared Young-Mills, we had this formula somewhere. So this is nothing but the Hoft coupling of our gauge theory. So then the Hoft coupling is large. The open string picture, this language in which we present this stack of NC Diffie brains is no longer valid because we have a strong gravitational correction from gravitational Dressen in this region, which involves scales much larger than the string scale. So this is no longer a valid picture. But we have a candidate for description of the same stack of the Diffie brains precisely in the limit where this picture fails. And this description will be given by the near horizon limit of these Diffie brains. So what we will do tomorrow is, of course, so all of this is not a proof of anything. This is ADS-CFT remains a conjecture. We describe one object at low energies, right, in different languages, and then we'll build a dictionary between two languages. But it's not a proof that A is equal to B. So what we are going to do tomorrow is we will do a number of experiments. So there is we kind of suspect that that governed by this parameter, which is ad hoc coupling, we have two languages to describe the same object, right? But if we have certain physical quantities about which we know that they don't change from weak coupling to strong coupling, then these quantities must be the same if I use this language or that language, right? And we will see that there are examples where you can do the experiment, Gedanken experiment, right, the thought experiment, with this language and this language, and indeed you confirm that these physical quantities remain the same in the opposite limits, as predicted by, for example, by gauge theory, because it has so many symmetries, and there are theorems that guarantee, because of supersymmetry, that certain things do not change as a function of coupling, right? And indeed, using this language and that language, you recover the same result. So that was the precursor, if you want, of the ADS-CFT correspondence, and we will discuss it tomorrow.